Yeah. All right, well, I guess I'll get started. Did everybody get handouts? Okay, the handouts aren't in your binders. Please do fill out your surveys. You can even fill them out now and just mark the fives all the way down for me. Make it easier so she can collect them. You are in the making the jump from Fusebox 3 to Fusebox 5 presentation. This is for people who are existing Fusebox 3 developers. Possibly you know a little bit about Fusebox 4, but you're mostly curious about making the jump from being a Fusebox 3 type of person to a Fusebox 5 type of person. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that I am Nat Papovich. I work for Web App for Services, and I do development for the company. We also do consulting. Server consulting, and we make the C Fusion server monitoring tool. Probably familiar with that. If not,
ask me about it later.
I'm a longtime Fuseboxer, but I'm a relatively new Fusebox 5 user, so I'm kind of in the same boat as some of you, hopefully. I'm not speaking from the White Tower for sure. And let's talk about why you should be here. Like I mentioned before, you should have experience with Fusebox 3, whether you're a beginner or maybe you've done a little bit of Fusebox work, or you're just a Fusebox guru. That's you. This is all equally applicable for you. There's a handouts as you came in the door there. This material isn't available in the binders. You can pick that up. And hopefully you don't know much about Fusebox 4 or 5. I'm treating Fusebox 4 and 5 as a single product, so to speak, of it at this point, since they're so very similar, and collectively they're a bit different from Fusebox 3. Interesting. I like this quote because... That's the theory. That's going to be the theme of this presentation, is that Fusebox 3 is very, very similar to Fusebox 5. It's not exactly similar. It's not a complete repeat. It's not going to be a flawless transition between being a Fusebox 3 developer and a Fusebox 5 developer, but it will feel very, very familiar, as opposed to making a jump to Model Glue or Mach 2 or anything like that. It will feel very familiar to you. Before I get started about becoming a Fusebox 5 developer, I just want to say that you should not, in my opinion, under any circumstances, upgrade from an existing Fusebox 3 application to Fusebox 5 application. You gain nothing when you're doing that. Fusebox 3 is not broken at all. It has very simple internals. The way it works is a lot simpler than any other framework in use these days. It's all over the place. It's been downloaded tens of thousands of times. There's applications everywhere that use Fusebox 3. I might even hazard to say that there are more Fusebox 3 applications in existence than any other Cold Fusion framework. It's also proven scalable. It's on some of the biggest Cold Fusion sites ever. It's been around for a very, very long time, which makes it proven maintainable as well. There are Fusebox 3 applications that were created in, let's say, 2001 when it first came out, and they're still around many years later. They've had a lot of bolts added onto them, so it's a good version. Fusebox 5 is more similar to Fusebox 3 than it is different. There are many, many correlations between the two. It may seem like a dramatic upgrade because of some syntactic changes, but your experience as a Fusebox 3 developer is going to be very, very applicable to Fusebox 5. There are 7 major differences that I'm going to cover in this presentation. The first is the controller. In Fusebox 3, it was called fbx-switch.cfm. And in Fusebox 5, it's now circuit.xml. It's a very simple one-to-one switch between the two versions. Here's an example of a FBX switch in Fusebox 3. So this may look familiar to you. I've got an edit user fuse action and an add user fuse action. There's some query files being run, and they're sharing a form, some exit points defined. You may notice there's a bit of a duplicate code in between these two fuse actions. And I'll talk about one of the benefits of Fusebox 5 in a minute. We can get rid of some of the duplicate code that we traditionally found ourselves doing in Fusebox 3. Here's the same two fuse actions in Fusebox 5. They're also exploded out into a third fuse action that helps us avoid some of the duplication of code. And we'll cover the controller in a little more detail. Syntactic changes between the two. But you can see they're very similar. There's an edit user fuse action is the new tag that you use in circuit.xml as opposed to the CF case statement. So from a semantic perspective, it's a little bit cleaner. You're defining a fuse action rather than just a case. But before we get into the actual rest of the syntactic differences between Fusebox, FBX switch, and circuit.xml, I want to cover the topic of why even have XML. What's the point of doing XML controller file? The main absolute reason is that circuit.xml allows what I call runtime compilation, which means that a fuse action is compiled down into a faster, more streamlined request for subsequent requests. And we'll cover that a little more in detail. There was a true architectural reason to move to circuit.xml, not just wanting to use XML kind of reason. So we'll talk about the XML grammar that's used in circuit.xml now. This is defining a fuse action in Fusebox 3 and defining the same fuse action in Fusebox 5. You can see they're very, very similar. And I may argue that the Fusebox 5 way is even a little bit better. That's how you included a template in FBX switch. That's how you include a template in circuit.xml. Again, you can see that they're very similar. This is how you define an exit point in Fusebox 3 and how you define an exit point in Fusebox 5. The XFA tag is kind of an official tag. Some people didn't use exit points. A lot of people didn't use exit points in Fusebox 3. There was no demand on you to use them. There is no demand on you to use them in Fusebox 5 either. You can also, this isn't necessarily defining an exit point. It's simply setting a variable. You can set variables as well in circuit.xml just by using the set tag. Some people like to put if statements in their FBX switch. I certainly do occasionally. You can do the exact same thing in circuit.xml with very clean XML tags. A lot of people see if locationed in their FBX switch files. That's how you do it in Fusebox 5. Again, very, very similar. Some people even see if moduled from within a FBX switch. You always got into a little bit of troubles with that in Fusebox 3 because there was layouts to account for and people groaned about potential performance issues. In Fusebox 5, that's all pretty much negated with the new do tag. This is a pretty different way that you would see if module essentially recall a new fuse action from within a fuse action. And as a result, you didn't do it in Fusebox 3 because this see if module thing was a big pain in the butt. If you accidentally added a closing tag on the end of that CF module, you got yourself in trouble, and you had to account for nested layouts duplicating and variable scopes overriding each other. But it's all cleaned up in Fusebox 5, which opens up some architectural possibilities for us. So this is a summary of all the various tags that you may use in Fusebox 3 and their corresponding tags in Fusebox 5. There are many, many more verbs. XML tag verbs that you can use in Fusebox 5. But I'm not talking about Fusebox 5 here. I'm talking about moving from Fusebox 3 to Fusebox 5. So there are tags that you can use in Fusebox 5 that have no correlating value in Fusebox 3, so that you can learn about those later. Mm-hmm. Excuse me? Yeah, you're writing XML.
Oh, it's fast to type?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a total mind switch, yeah.
There's probably two things that that I can address about that point. One is that you're writing in XML, so it's difficult sometimes to turn your brain, to turn Cold Fusion off in your brain and turn XML on in your brain, for sure. Code editors will help you out a lot. I use CF Eclipse. I also use HomeSite. They will both, I know Dreamweaver will do the same thing. They will pick up the fact that you're working on a circuit.xml, and Fusebox has what's called a DTD, a document type definition for what the structure of a circuit.xml is, what the various tags you're allowed to put in a circuit.xml. So when I'm working on a circuit.xml file, I can open bracket and pause, and I'll get tag insight to show me I can include, I can relocate, I can set, I can XFA, I can, if those are the various tags that I can use. So there is a bit of a mind shift, but there are certainly editors to help you out, and you have to put on your circuit.xml hat, your XML writing hat, when you usually have on a Cold Fusion writing hat. Yeah, it's a bit of a change. So circuit.xml, I think, is you're writing XML now. The tags that you use in Fusebox 3 are very, very similar to the tags you use in Fusebox 5. And you could architect your circuit.xmls in the exact same way that you architected your FBX switches. The second major difference is circuit settings. Most people didn't have to think about circuit settings that much in Fusebox 3 because you set them once and they're set in the FBX circuits file. Oh, I'm sorry. Circuit settings, not circuits. Circuit settings like FBX settings, the root FBX settings, children FBX settings as well. In Fusebox 5, there are a lot of ways to do FBX, the functional equivalent of FBX settings. One of them is to make a plugin of the pre-fuse action phase. You can do a pre-process plugin. You can do a global fuse action pre-process. You can do a pre-fuse action in circuit.xml. There are a lot of ways to do it. You could even use a file called fusebox.init.cfm. But with all these various options, how are we supposed to know which one? We just want to know, I did it this way in Fusebox 3, there was one way to do it. What's the same way to do it in Fusebox 5? And the answer is pretty simple. The prefuse action tag in circuit.xml is what you should use as a darn near one-to-one translation between the way you did FBX settings in Fusebox 3 and the way you should do the same jobs in Fusebox 5. Here's the prefuse action tag in Fusebox 5. You can see it's in circuit.xml. It doesn't have to be at the top. XML is the language is such that you can put these tag sets anywhere in the body of the file that you want. I like to put it at the top so it's easy to look at. Anything you put in between an opening and closing prefuse action tag gets run for every request to this circuit. So you could very easily transfer a Fusebox, the way you architect your Fusebox 3 application into Fusebox 5 by simply including an FBX settings file. Most people don't do that in Fusebox 5. Instead, they'll include a file more like act prefuse action, or they'll just put some actions to run in between the opening and closing prefuse action tags. Another major difference in the settings is that in Fusebox 3, the settings were inherited. And in Fusebox 5, inheritance is optional. And by inheritance, I mean if you have a parent circuit and it has an FBX settings file, and you have a child circuit and it has an FBX settings file, both will run when the child is being called. And they run automatically. You can't avoid having the parent's FBX settings run. But in Fusebox 5, that's entirely optional and it's turned off by default. And the way that you get your parent's prefuse action to run in Fusebox 5 is by adding the call super equals true attribute to the prefuse action tag. So it's almost It's almost as if we, as former Fusebox 3, now Fusebox 5 developers, we should always just put that in, because then our applications will behave the same way they did in Fusebox 3. You don't have to. You can have a child decide to not use the call super attribute, which would then turn off prefuse action inheriting when it runs. You can also not necessarily run anything in a child just by calling the prefuse action tag call super and not putting any body into the prefuse action tag, just having it call whatever its parent said. So the prefuse action tag is very similar to the way we did things in Fusebox 3. It's a new way that you do it, but it solves the same purpose, and we can do the same job in Fusebox 5 that we used to do in Fusebox 3. Correct. Yeah, in Fusebox 3, we relied on a file called FBX setting. In Fusebox 5, we rely on whatever is in between the opening and closing prefuse action tag set. Yeah, just how we could do it in Fusebox 3. Yeah. So one thing it's important to note is that you can have prefuse actions run in the same order that they ran in Fusebox 3, in that a child is called and its parent FBX settings is run first, then the child. Exact same thing happens in Fusebox 5. If you add the call super tag before the child's prefuse action starts running, it'll look up and call its parent's prefuse action and then resolve the child's prefuse action. The same way it worked in Fusebox 3 with the settings. So the third major difference is circuit mappings. Circuit mappings have a strong correlation with the way prefuse actions work as well. We didn't think about it much as Fusebox 3 developers. You just opened up this file every now and then and added some circuit mappings and called it good. Sometimes a little bit mysterious about how you said it, but you just copy-pasted lines and added a new path and added a new alias. In Fusebox 5, we use the circuits tag in a file called fusebox.xml. Fusebox.xml is making its debut now. We'll cover fusebox.xml a little bit as we go on. But for now, know that there is a strong correlation between the way you did it in Fusebox 3 and Fusebox 5. You just put your definitions in a different place. Here it is in Fusebox 3. This could be an FBX circuits file, defining an admin circuit, defining a user's circuit as in the admin circuit. So the users in this case would be the child circuit to the admin parent. This is how you do it in Fusebox 5. In between the circuits opening and closing tag, you define the same thing as an admin circuit, as a user circuit. And you can see here in the user's circuit, we're defining it as a child of the parent, the admin parent. Simply by putting a circuit inside another circuit directory-wise does not make child and parent relationship. A child-parent relationship is defined by the way you specify the parent attribute in the circuit tag. So I could have two folders right next to each other in the directory file system. One could be the parent and one could be the child, simply by the way I define the parent attribute in the tag, not by the fact that it is inside another directory. Yeah?
So with that call super, the call super calls that parent.
Correct. So if you wanted to be really obtuse, you could have a folder on a very high level in your directory and a folder on a very low level in your directory. Have the low one inside, actually be the parent of that one if you wanted to. You could just go crazy and blow everyone's mind that way by the way you specified the parent attribute. That would be really bad if you did it that way because everyone would be confused. But you could do that. That's how you define, this is the way you define parent hierarchy in Fusebox 5, not just by putting them in a specific directory. So you mentioned the way the call super works. This is exactly how the call super works. You see at the top it says admin users. We're in the user's sub-circuit at this point. We've already defined the user's sub-circuit as a child of the admin parent circuit. And this will, by adding the call super to the prefuse action tag, we're telling the fuse box to run the admin's prefuse action whenever this circuit's prefuse action is run. Not because it's in a directory beneath it, but because we defined it as its parent. If you don't add that call super attribute, it does not run, despite the fact that you already specified it as a child. So just because you say something's your parent doesn't mean that its prefuse action is going to run. You can turn off the running of a prefuse action, the parent's prefuse action, just by avoiding the call super tag in the prefuse, call super attribute in the prefuse action tag. So in Fusebox 2, you have to remember that the circuit hierarchy is defined via the circuit path, the path that you define the circuits in the setting structure. And in Fusebox 5, the circuit hierarchy is defined by the parent attribute of the circuit tag. It's a different way that you have to do it, but you can get the same job done. So I'm going to argue that they're more similar than different. You can get the same task done in a slightly different way. Number 4 of major differences is Fusebox XML. We took a little peek at it a few slides ago. In Fusebox 3, there was a root FBX settings that behaved a little bit differently than children FBX settings. If you didn't have a root FBX settings, things started to go awry with Fusebox 3 applications. They always expected a root FBX settings to be there. They ran a slightly different order than children's FBX settings files. So you put variables in that root FBX settings file to know it's going to behave kind of like application.cfm. It's always going to run for every request. You're going to put your CF application tag in there. You're going to put request variable settings in there. You're going to put other application scope variables in there. You might do session initialization in the root FBX settings. And you could also make some modifications to your Fusebox application ran by modifying section 2 of the core file. Most people probably never even opened it up, but you could define what the action variable is, whether you're going to use fuse action or whether you're going to use FA. You could turn off various modes in the Fusebox 3 core file. Because the way that you do those same jobs in Fusebox 5 is via the Fusebox XML and the app init global fuse action and via the application.cfc in Fusebox 5. In Fusebox.xml, there is a circuits tag, which we looked at briefly. There is a plugins tag, which we didn't look in, and we're not actually going to cover. The global fuse actions that we will cover a little bit, and there is a parameters tag set in Fusebox.xml. These are the 4 tag sets in Fusebox.xml. Which one of them are required? None of them are required. If you don't have any circuits defined, you don't have an application. But it will run and do nothing. Circuits should be there. I think it's the only one that's absolutely required. It's important that in Fusebox 5 applications, you go ahead and use application.cfm or application.cfc. Unlike it was sort of advocated that you didn't, it was not encouraged to use application.cfm in Fusebox 3. Instead, the theory was to put it all in FBX settings.cfm. That lets you handle the CF moduling into the Fusebox in a little bit more of a graceful way than if you had used it in application.cfm. But because of the way a request is compiled down in Fusebox 5 and the way that you include fuse actions from within fuse actions in Fusebox 5, it's entirely worthwhile to use application.cfc for its intended purpose, the CF application tag, session variables, etc. I'm not going to cover the application.cfc, but you should use it in your Fusebox 5 applications. So Fusebox.xml is pretty different, the way you put things in root FBX settings in Fusebox 3. Now you put things in various places in the system for Fusebox 5. That's a pretty significant difference between the two versions. The 5th major difference is nested layouts. In Fusebox 3, there was an odd duck file called FBX layouts. It was kind of ill-conceived. It did an interesting job, but it didn't fit in with the rest of the way the architecture was built.
In Fusebox 5, you can do what you did in FBX layouts with a number of ways. You can do it as a post-process plugin. You can apply nested layouts via a post-fuse action plugin, a post-process global fuse action, a post-fuse action, similar to whether we had a pre-fuse action. We have a post-fuse action. But the best way to do it, the way you should do it as Fusebox 5 developers, is as do action, the do tag. We looked at the do tag. I mentioned the do tag earlier, but let's actually take a look at it. This is the way you did an FBX layouts file in Fusebox 3. You defined the layout directory, and what you put in the FBX layouts file was completely up to you, as long as you set two variables, fusebox.layoutdir and fusebox.layoutfile. How you got around to setting those is up to you. Maybe some people did a switch case. Maybe some people passed in variables in the URL string. Maybe some people just hard-coded across their entire application. What you did in there was up to you, and all you had to do was set the two variables, fusebox.layoutdir and fusebox.layoutfile. In Fusebox 5, we apply layout wrappers on a per-fuse action basis, not on a per-circuit basis. There are six or seven or more ways to do layouts, but I'm telling you the way that is easiest for us as former Fusebox 3 developers. We should apply them on a per-fuse action basis. And by per-fuse action basis, I mean this. This is our same circuit that I've only been looking at. The edit user fuse action does the user form fuse action after it retrieves from the database. The add user fuse action, again, does the user form fuse action after it gets something from a database or initializes something. The user form fuse action is the only one that does a layout down here at the bottom. Do the layout. That way we're not worrying about doubled up layouts. We're not concerned about applying layouts for action only fuse actions. There's no trickery that you have to do. It seems like I was always shooting myself in the foot with FBX layouts. I'd always have to hack into it when somebody wanted to remove the footer from the site in one particular instance. It was always a pain in the butt, I thought. When you apply them on a per fuse action basis, you fix all those problems. Now you may think, oh gosh, now I'm going to have to add this do action, do layout action to every single one of my fuse actions. Yeah, there's no better way to do it. There are lazier ways to do it, but this is the best way to do it.
Is that because of the MVC type architecture, you're really at that point talking to the view layer of your app and saying this?
Yeah, Yeah, you're basically saying only for my view fuse actions should I apply layouts. Yeah.
So don't use the post fuse action tag. If you did use the post fuse action tag, it would behave just like the pre fuse action tag,
except it would run at the end. You could say for everything in this circuit, apply a layout. And that's kind of how we did it in Fusebox 3. We said for this entire circuit, here's some layout instructions. You could do the exact same thing in Fusebox 5. That would be a one-to-one relationship between the way we did it in Fusebox 3 and the way you could do it in Fusebox 5. That would be the easiest translation for us as former Fusebox 3 developers. But that's the wrong way to do it, because, again, you're going to be doubling up layouts. You're going to be applying layouts unnecessarily. The way you should use it is in a per-fuse action basis. So here's another example. This is a save user fuse action, so it's the result of a form submission. We run a query to maybe save the database. If the query was successful, we relocate to a list of users. If it failed, we call the user form again to populate it with an error message or something. Well, what happens if we were applying layouts on a per circuit basis? You have a do action here that would get a layout. And this entire fuse action would get a layout, even though it was all in one request. You'd then have two layouts. They'd be nested, wrapped, double wrapped. You have double layouts, which would be wrong. So you...
That was the problem we ran into. You would see a module back into our application of Fusebox 3. You would
have
different layouts to say, just use an empty one.
Right. Right, so in Fusebox 3, you say, CF module, apply layout, no, or layout file equals blank, or some other goofy trickery that kind of worked. We got used to that kind of the way that you had to do it in Fusebox 3, and it might be natural to us now, but once you start applying layouts on a per fuse action basis, things just are so much cleaner. You do have to do a little bit more typing. If you've got a circuit that maybe has, let's say you have 6 circuits in your application, and you maybe have 150 fuse actions spread out across those 6 circuits, and let's say 40 of them are layout, are view fuse actions, you may have to type that line, you have to type the do layout line 40 times. That's the penalty, that's the price you pay for having very granular control and proper control of your layouts at the right time.
Things like Ajax and Flex become easier because one of the problems with the experience with Fusebox 3 is turning off the layout. You know, adding that quick, throwing back to the layout directly and saying, if this condition, then don't actually put the wrapper around it. Because if you want a JavaScript request, a piece of JavaScript concern, that kind of thing, or you pass in an object back, or it's another method.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of other sort of client-side reasons why you would not want to have every fuse action be wrapped in a layout. Now, you could do that in Fusebox 3. You could, you know, have a list of view, or if you use like an MVC folder structure, you could do some trickery in FBX layouts to say, if I'm in a view circuit, then apply my layout. Maybe we did it like that. Maybe some of us did it like that. I never did. I just always applied them on the whole time and dealt with the trials of it and the debugging of it when I had to nest it or have it not wrap or whatever. Somebody wants a pop-up window now, and I got to strip out the header and put a different footer in. And
so I think it comes out of the matter of how complex your application is. If you know you're just never going to need to do anything other than your layout, you might consider both of these actions.
Yeah. You, not me. Exactly. If you can be assured that every single one of your fuse actions is always going to have the same layout, then you could be really lazy and put in a post-fuse action. But when that one comes along that needs it differently, well, you could modify your post-fuse action and say, if the fuse action is this one, then apply that. Otherwise, apply the default one. Well, then you're back to where you were in FBX layouts.
So hopefully we'll remember this. Layout wrappers need to be applied per fuse action and not per circuit. So it's pretty darn different. The way you organize things, you still get the benefits of wrapping your page, your body, your fuse action body in a layout, but you get a lot more benefits out of it. I think we're all sort of in agreement about that. You might have seen the content variable attribute in one of our one of my previous code snippets. That's what handles the wrapping of the fuse action body into a particular variable that you can then dereference in your layout file, just how we did it in layout files in Fusebox 3. The content variable is circuit.xml's version of the CFSave content tag, and that anything between the opening and closing CFSave content gets wrapped up into the variable. And if you apply the content variable attribute to an include tag or a do tag, then everything that ran in that include or in that do will be stuffed up into that variable that you defined as the content variable. Now let's take a look at it here. This is our user circuit again. We got this form that displays a user form. We're including the user form template, and we're taking the output of the user form and wrapping it up into the body variable. Now we can have this. Now if we were to go pound body pound somewhere, it would output the form. What we're going to do is take that body variable and then let it be available to the layout fuse action. Here's the layout fuse action in our layout circuit. This is the admin, sort of the default one for the admin that all the admin fuse actions are going to use. Before we actually output that body variable, in this case holding the value of the form, we'll create a write navigation. We'll create a header. So now we'll have variables called body, one called write, one called head. And in our layout file, what do? We just hit pound, write, pound. And then put some HTML tables around it or whatever. And then you hit pound, head, pound. Pound, body, pound. That's how you would output the variables in your layout file. So your layout files, the actual lay whatever files, are the exact same in Fusebox 3 and Fusebox 5. But how those variables get into it is a little bit different.
Given that we're at a framework conference, one of the big things is separation of
No, I, yeah.
The, it feels like we're saying, like, here's the variable body, so that's tied to a use action, and now we need a body variable.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, so we're in our layout circuit, in our layout fuse action, we expect this body variable to be available. And where does body get set? It gets set in some completely other place. So now every time this layout file is run, it's dependent upon its caller to define the body variable. I can answer that with two ways. It feels a little bit dirty to him to have that that coupling between the two completely separate circuits. The two solutions I can offer to you are, one, that I use the word body, the variable body, for all my content variables. There, unless it's a case like this where I've got multiple ones. But in the target circuit, it always outputs a variable called body. Similarly, in Fusebox 3, there was always fusebox.layout. That was the variable that you dereferenced in your layout files. That's just a stylistic thing that I've decided from now on, I'm always going to have the last content variable called body as it gets passed out to the layout circuit. Now, regarding your question about MVC trying to keep the various view layers separate, if all of your model code is out of Fusebox, you don't have any business logic in Fusebox whatsoever, all of it's in CFCs, Fusebox is purely a controller and a view. You may have multiple view layers, layout layer, you know, different circuit view layers, but it becomes far easier to tie those layers, to feel comfortable tying those layers together, because they all do one job of outputting the stuff to the browser, whatever the business logic that came out of your models are. Its only job is to output it into the browser. So very tightly, yeah. Exactly. The controller at that point is hardly even a controller. It's more of a view state controller. It assists in creating view states. All the business logic is handled elsewhere. So the business logic is really not that tied to the controller. The controller is just heavily working with the views and just barely indirectly sort of working with the model at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's say here we're in our admin layout, and let's say the admin itself is admin layout is supposed to be wrapped in a site-wide header and footer. At the bottom of this include, you'd say include template layout admin content variable equals body, and then do site-wide layout. You can do it, you can wrap them as many times as you want. In fact, this is a nested layout in that, going back to this screen, this fuse action produces one piece of the page. This fuse action produces a piece of the page around it by the fact that we've, in our lay admin file, we're, you know, outputting that variable in that spot. You can call do actions after do actions after do actions all in one fuse action if you wanted to, each time passing the result via the content variable into each to do get the China doll effect, the Russian doll effect, just like you got in Fusebox 3. Yes. Yeah, so you'd add on the include template lay admin would say content variable equals body, and then another do action. Content variable equals body, and another do action if you wanted to. That's how you would apply the nested layouts. Not on a per circuit basis, not in a, as the circuit climbs up, it applies it, but on a, as an explicit definition basis. Per fuse action, yeah. But in this case, all of our user fuse actions are running up into this admin layout. So then we're letting the admin layout do whatever it wants. So if we want to add more nested layouts to the admin, all the entire admin circuit, we can't, because we know the entire admin circuit always just passes its layout responsibilities off to the admin fuse action of the layouts. So content variable combined with this concept of doing layout, the do action, really fixes a lot of the problems that were inherent in Fusebox FBX layouts. Particularly in regards to the trying to be being unable to CF module successfully and cleanly and without headaches and occasional unfixable bugs in Fusebox 3. So content variable is completely new functionality in Fusebox 5. We didn't really do anything like it in Fusebox 3. You could if you architected them that way, but it's built into the language of Fusebox 5. So it's not new or different or similar. It's just new functionality.
Something like that. And another thing I think is right that we were focusing on the 100% CSS layout is that you're running, which is great because that really kind of lines up with div tags for CSS.
Yep. Yeah, so in your layout file, you could have div ID equals body. And you know that, hey, I'm always going to produce the body variable in that, in between that open and closing div. Yeah. Yeah, it's a real logical way to do it. You'd have to communicate with your designer or put your designer hat on and then talk to your developer hat at the same time to make sure that the two lined up. That'd be a great way to do it, to tie content variables as they're being assembled into a page into a CSS layout. That'd be a fantastic way to do it, yeah. And if you can get a great CSS designer to do that, you're making money.
They love it when you hand them a page. That's here for the data on the page and the IDs.
Yeah.
Something looks nice.
Yeah. And, you know, we may have done it with various levels of varying amounts of success, but I have had some occasional success with designers, giving designers a layout file, saying, hey, you know what, I'll teach you what pound means, I'll teach you what output means, if output, and that's all you really need to know. And they're generally pretty good about not messing up the if output tag and not messing up the pounds. And this just adds to that, you know, it just continues that tradition that we had in Fusebox 3 of real clean separation between layout files and the rest of our pages.
We do it the other way around, actually. We get the design view and edit from our build first, and then go to full CSS layout, and then basically break the using the layout files and piece of the form where we've done this, and breaking it out into the right person, like what's local, what's inside now, and this, and breaking it out into these content variables. We have so much success with it, the designers even know to go into the right place. If we go look at the layout files and poke around in there with no problems.
Yes, you could do it. You could do it the other way. You could get a layout. You could get a competent designer who is thoughtful about applying the ID attribute to the div tags. And you say, hey, man, you don't need to put ID in here. Or maybe you do for your CSS, or maybe you don't. But it'd be real helpful if you did, because then we know that we're all talking about the same spot on the page. Yeah. So the last thing I want to cover is changes to the core files. Some of you can turn off now at this point if you're not interested in it. But it's a very, very different between a very different, I might add, Sean, right? He's back there laughing. A few hundred thousand lines different, maybe?
I don't remember how many lines were in the Fusebox 3 core files. The Fusebox 4 core files were substantially bigger.
Yeah.
And the Fusebox 5 core files are about 2 to 3 times as big as Fusebox 4.
So let's say there may be 10 times many more lines in 50 times, 20, many, many, many times more lines in Fusebox 5 than there were in the Fusebox 3 core files. So that means there are a lot of changes. The engines are completely different, despite the fact that we, as Fusebox 3 developers, can architect our Fusebox 5 applications in much the same way. So in Fusebox 3, we had a FBX Fusebox, you know, underscore CF5, whatever, core file. And now we have... These are just three of the CFCs that make up Fusebox 5. I don't even know how many there are, a dozen, 15, something like that. That's just the CFCs. There are all sorts of accessories. All the verbs in your circuit.xml, all the tags in circuit.xml have another file associated with them, and you can add your own verbs to circuit.xml as well, which would simply create more and more and more files that run the engine. But we can ignore all those files if we want to, but let's actually kind of take a look at what they do, all those core files for us. In Fusebox 3, they were essentially runtime core files for every single request, even if there were 100 requests all in a row for the exact same URL. If you just hit refresh, 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 the core file would run every single time. That's not the way it happens in Fusebox 5. Let's take a look at it in Fusebox 3. This is a graphic to show us a Fusebox 3 lifecycle. Here's this distressed woman. Hey, I need a user form, she says. So she sends a URL to ColdFusion server. ColdFusion server picks up index.cfm and passes it on. Index.cfm hands the request off the Fusebox core file, which looks up the circuit definition, which finds the root FBX settings, which then goes down to the target circuit FBX settings, goes to the target switch, calls any of the fuses defined in the switch, goes backs its way out doing layouts, then applies the layouts that were defined, and then hands it back to ColdFusion and back to the user. That's a lot of work that was done for every single request. It was pretty speedy work. You know, the core files were very optimized. Like I mentioned before, Fusebox 3s performed very, very, very well in very big sites, but it was just unnecessary to have all that stuff repeating every single time. Not only that, but you had problems where you wanted to call two or three fuse actions in one request. You're going to have that entire process run for every single fuse action you want to call in a given request, which means you never really did it. You just always avoided running multiple fuse actions in a single request.
In Fusebox 5, a request is compiled into a parse file, which is sort of two different words, compiled and then parsed. There's even a writing stage as well. So we'll just go through it briefly.
This is the same user requesting the same URL from the same ColdFusion server, but this time we're running Fusebox 5 instead of Fusebox 3.
At this point, it's very similar to Fusebox 3, calling index, which then includes Fusebox 5. No difference. However, requests aren't always run through the whole circuit lookup mechanism and settings and blah, 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 blah. Only thing we're doing immediately is calling the parse file. The parse file gets written the first time this fuse action is requested. This request is called users.userform. Whenever that's called the very first time, the whole parsing compilation effort occurs. I have no idea how it happens. I don't care at all how it happens. All I know is that on the second and all subsequent requests, this big file is created for me. And you can open it up. And you can see that there's some junk in there and lots of things happening. The engine starts up and it checks for stuff and it does things, but most of the time for second, third, fourth, and subsequent requests, virtually nothing happens except your fuses are called, each in row, in order, as defined in your fuse actions. There's a fuse action that does my form. There's a fuse action that does my layout. These are the exact same fuses that we were looking at, the same files that we as programmers have written, just get called all by this one file. Now, the stuff that occurs in between these lines, like this section and that section, is really, really, really performant code. If you turn on debugging in a production mode, you'll see that the Fusebox engine really doesn't do much of anything for second and subsequent requests. If you turn it on for the first request, it will kill your debugging output because it's just ginormous, everything that it does that first request. But we don't care about the first. We just care about subsequent requests.
So the layout file finishes, the request is passed back to this parse file, which then goes back to the ColdFusion server and back to the happy user. So it's a lot simpler.
There is some overhead that occurs when the engine looks for the parsed file and, you know, does your pre-fuse actions for you regularly, but it's necessary overhead. So this single page compilation, the fact that everything gets pulled into a single CFM with includes out to your fuses as defined, gives you two major benefits. We've already brought these up a little bit as we're going along. What I call zero-cost fuse actions. There's no penalty to calling as many fuse actions as you want in a single request. You're not paying the price. You're not calling the core multiple times. There's not unnecessary overhead. There's no reason not to call as many fuse actions as you want in a given request, which then follows up with the concept of making as granular fuse actions as you want. You could even have a fuse action for every single fuse if you wanted to be a little bit of eccentric about it. And then just do all your fuse actions would do is just call other fuse action in a row, in a row, in a row. There's no lack of performance. There's no reason not to use as granular fuse actions as you want. We saw it. There was an add, an edit, and a user form, a specific user form fuse action that we called that only displayed the form. And that's very, very granular.
So you change the way you architect Fusebox applications a little bit in that you can now, your circuit.xml is a little bit different. I'm no longer avoiding doing CF module to the core files. Instead, I can call multiple fuse actions in a single request if I want to. And those open up a lot of possibilities for us as newfound Fusebox 5 developers. I think I'm at the end. Yep. Questions? I know we got a lot of questions as we're going along. There's before I get a question, there's a sample applications that are going to be included on the website, the conference website. There's a Fusebox 3 version, and the exact same application translated into Fusebox 5. So you'll just be able to open up one and see how I did it in Fusebox 3, or how I did it in Fusebox 3, and then how I did it in Fusebox 5. As we're going through some of those slides, there's like 6, 8, 10 different ways to do things. I just want to show you the most direct way to do it as Fusebox 3 developers. So Yeah.
So your layouts are not just another fuse action.
Perfect. Exactly. They are, before they were, before, in Fusebox 3, they were this weird limbo. Like, I've got a fuse, or lay at files, fuses. Well, that's kind of weird. They're not really. There's fuse actions. What's the deal with them? They're always treated differently. But now they're just regular old first-class fuse action citizens. Yeah, and you don't have to call them lay. You can call them anything you want. You don't have to make a layouts circuit if you don't want to. You can just put layout files directly in your other circuits, your action circuits you want. But it's good to have a layout circuit, I find, yeah. They are first-class fuse action citizens. Yeah. Question? Any other questions? No? Yeah, sure. Right. Yeah, there's definitely, you can definitely apply a great bit of logic in your circuit.xmls. There is a loop tag. There's John, I never even use the other ones. What other crazy tags are there in circuit.xml?
Crazy tags?
Crazy ones, man. Invoke.
Invoke, instantiate. Do, if, loop, in Fusebox 5, no limitations on nesting.
No limitations on nesting. So you can do a loop inside a loop inside a loop, and if, and if, and if, and if. Yeah. So that's loops and ifs and includes. That's really all you need, and relocate. So. Absolutely. There's no, yeah. When you open up, it's fascinating. When you, I love writing circuit.xml, some loops and some ifs, and then sometimes the engine blows up as it's parsing things. If I'm in development full load mode, thanks a lot for that one. And I'll open the parse file, like, hey, what's wrong? The parse file has cold fusion translations of those tags. So if you write an if tag, there's a cf if in its place. And if you write a loop tag, there's a CF loop tag in place. So it's a real one-to-one translation between those. That's why they're called the exact same thing. I mean, the only one that's really different is the CF location versus relocate tag. But I like relocate as a better word than location, because like that would be a little weird of a tag name.
So you can do all the validation of the form that's been submitted, and then send them
Yeah, so one fuse action could accept the form submission and do some validation, and if the validation is proper, it could then go to another fuse action that saves it to a database, or it could go back to the form fuse action.
Right.
Yeah, so you may have, you know, if you take an application and you re-architect it for Fusebox 5, you may have see a 30% increase in the number of fuse actions that you have, but you might also see a 30% decrease in the amount of redundant pain-in-the-butt code that you wrote to get the same thing done in Fusebox 3. Yeah. So really opt for those granular fuse actions in Fusebox 5. Any more questions? Yeah.
Do I need to learn Fusebox 4? Like, I see a lot of the examples are Fusebox 4, so I'm trying to learn Fusebox 5 and I see the Fusebox 4 examples.
Yeah. Do you need to learn Fusebox 4? I don't know anything about Fusebox 4. I wrote one 4.0 application back in the day and haven't done anything in years. You can take a Fusebox 4.1 application and drop it into the Fusebox 5 core files environment, and for the most part, they will run. I think there's been a few examples of weird things that people did kind of under the radar in Fusebox 4 that have been kind of kicked out of the Fusebox 5 world. But Fusebox 4 and Fusebox 5 are supposed to be the same. If you write a Fusebox 4 application, there's no reason not to pop it over to the Fusebox 5 engine, and it'll just run. Unlike a Fusebox 3 application, which has no hope of running in a Fusebox 4 environment because it's fundamentally different. Yeah, and there's some new tags in Fusebox 5 that you can take advantage of, some new settings and things like that, but for the most part, they'll just run. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've been really careful about, to make sure that Fusebox 4 and 4.1 actually run unchanged. In fact, one of the things that you can actually do is if you have a Fusebox 4 application, you've got four files right there, you simply unpack Fusebox 5 core files over the top of them. And the first time you use it, the core files will automatically realize that you've changed versions and will reload themselves and reload the Fusebox file and everything. So the upgrade process
Yeah, so circuit.xmls are the exact same. The way the do tag works on our from our point of view is the exact same. It may be completely different under the covers. I don't care. I don't know. But the point is our applications will run on 4 and 5 just the exact same way. Yeah. The drop-in replacement, essentially. Yeah, and so also, likewise, if you see a sample application that's written in Fusebox 4, pick it up and learn how to learn what that application is telling you. Just because it's Fusebox 4 and you want to write Fusebox 5 application doesn't mean that it has no value. Everything that you learned in Fusebox 4 is equally applicable in Fusebox 5. Yeah. There's no reason to use 4 at this point. Cut it out. Go to 5. And now there's no reason to use 3 anymore, is there? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I don't know anything about Mach 2 plugins. I know about as much about Fusebox 5 plugins. Not much. Yeah. There's a lot of plugin points during the process. We have before the request, after the request, before the fuse action, after the fuse action. Lots of plugin points. Yeah, yeah. That you can, and there are some plugins available on the web. If you hunt down Fusebox plugins, you can make your own plugins. There's a whole bunch of stuff I did not cover in Fusebox 5. Plugins, custom lexicons, the sky's the limit that I didn't cover. Yeah.
Why did you said you've not done much with Fusebox 4 and you've advocated jumping straight to 5. Why did you personally choose not to go with Fusebox 4?
I know Fusebox 3 really darn well. You know, I've got a lot of Fusebox 3 hammers that I like to hit on things with. And I just finally caught up with the times and said Fusebox 5. Fusebox 3 was not broken for me. It still isn't broken. I may find some reason, some time to use Fusebox 3. I never felt like I needed to make the jump up. But now with Fusebox 5, it was imperative that I do because the performance gains are incredible. I can use multiple fuse actions in a fuse action now and things like that. Yeah. So it's a personal thing. Most people have made the jump. Me? Fusebox person? Yeah. Primarily. I mean, a lot of it's stylistic issues, and a lot of it's just how good you are with that hammer. And I'm really good with the Fusebox hammer. I can beat up a lot of things with it. Like I got a pneumatic nailer that says Fusebox 3. I just, you know, like that. I don't even have to hit things anymore. All right, I gotta get out of here so we can talk. Kill me, aren't you? Thanks. Get out. Are you on at 1:30? Okay, good. Yeah. She said 5 minutes.